All right. Hey, folks, thanks for tuning in to another episode of the BAMF Podcast. I am your host, Mike Lafferty. With me tonight, I have occasional co-host and a hell of a nice guy, Dan Hauser.
Hey, everybody. How's it going?
Dan, welcome back to the podcast. It's always a pleasure to have you.
Hey, great to be back.
And I understand that in addition to your notable talents as an artist and a game designer and a all-around great guy, you're going to be an actor here sometime soon.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, I'm actually going to be in a production locally here of Avenue Q.
Very nice.
Playing Brian, an overweight, out-of-work, failed comedian. So, life imitating art, you be the judge. Come on down to the Janesville Performing Arts Center and take a look.
And what nights is that going to be?
March 24th and 25th, and 30th and 31st.
Okay, so coming up very soon. And we're looking forward to that. Also joining us this evening is Mr. Brandon Blackmore. How are you doing, sir?
I'm spectacular.
And this is your first time on the podcast. Thank you very much for joining us tonight.
Thank you for having me.
Now, I had seen your name around RPGNet and various other forums for just like forever, but I was never completely clear on who you were, what you did. Can you kind of give us a quick, kind of 3x5 card of your resume?
The bio.
Yeah.
That's mainly because I'm nobody very important and I haven't done very much. But I've been around forever. I had a small press gaming company back in the early 1990s called Blackgate Publishing. Mm-hmm. And we put out a big game called Legacy, which is about immortals who roamed the earth and fought each other with swords. And it was a fun game, you know. It was a product of its time, and I'm still proud of it to this day, although I kind of cringe when I look at it. So, what are you going to do?
It would be a good product to have a Queen soundtrack playing in the background while you were playing.
It never occurred to me, but now that you mentioned I bet you're right. Okay. Actually, Battlefield Press has licensed that for me to like revamp the mechanics, bring them into the 21st century, and maybe give it some new art and put that out. So that's
John is a good man to do that.
Jonathan Thompson, he's a hell of a guy.
Yep. Hell of a guy. John is a good man to do that.
Yeah, I'm not really involved with the revamp other than in like a mentor, you know, Jor-El capacity, but, you know, I wish them the best of luck with it.
Jonathan Thompson sticks a crystal into his ice palace there in Alabama, and I'll grab an image of you. I'm just amusing myself at this point, ladies and gentlemen. I'm sorry.
It's okay.
I heard your reference. I went after it whole hog. It just wasn't working. So let's move on. Okay, so.
Marlon Brandon.
Marlon Brando.
Brandon. Get
yeah,
it?
My son.
Ah.
Oh.
If you're going to use it, you can. Don't make it a dice pool. You don't want to do that.
I forgot that my real role when dancing on the podcast is to throw out straight lines. But I think punch lines.
That was Blackgate. Did that in the early 90s. And lost money. So essentially shut that down and just did gaming stuff for the fun of it for the next, 15, 20 years. Did a game called Under the Broken Moon, which is a Thundar the Barbarian role-playing
Ookla,
game.
Ookla, Tila, we ride!
Yeah. Ariel, Ookla, ride! Demon dogs! So, I'm a huge Thundar the Barbarian fan. So
I'm a huge Alec Toth fan.
That's interesting.
Mm-hmm. I'm also a huge Dom fan, and basically anything. Rock and roll. I love animation. And you love drawing. So, throwing that out there.
I've got rock and roll is really interesting. Nirvana, the Canadian company that made that, they had a choice between doing that and doing heavy metal. So they said, we'd rather work on our own thing rather than an adaptation of somebody else's thing. Which is why nowadays no one's ever heard of heavy metal, but everybody knows rock and roll. So.
Can you guys tell me Fire and Ice?
I'm sorry, what?
Fire and Ice,
yeah.
What's the guy's name, Bashy?
Yep, Ralph Bashy.
And it looks like some cursory attention from Frank Frazetta as well on that.
Mm-hmm, on the cover.
Yeah, pretty basic. That's pretty much it.
Let's see what else is going on. Oh, I've been maintaining some very little-known websites for role-playing game-type activities, RPG Library, PBEM News, which, There's a handful of people using. They're not RPGNet by any means, but
you know, why don't you give us the URLs?
RPGlibrary.org.
Mm-hmm.
It's spelled RPGlibrary.org.
Mm-hmm.
And PBEM News, which is PBEMNEWS.org. But actually, if you go to RPG Library, PBEM News is right there. So
okay, cool, cool.
And on RPG Library, I got a section for open gaming stuff, D20 RSD, Jazz, which is a game I worked on, Open D6 and Traveler's, stuff that's been opened, things like that. It's a work in progress.
Okay.
So that's the kind of stuff I've been doing for the last, you know, 2 decades.
Okay, cool, cool, cool. And we have you on tonight because you wrote a new game.
Yes! I have not been in the commercial arena as far as game publishing goes for a very, very long time, since before the World Wide Web, which changed everything. And it's before the popularity of PDFs as a delivery medium. So I'm kind of a stranger in a strange land. I'm trying to do a commercial thing again and, you know, hope that I can just give people something that they have fun playing. But it's really different, because when you're just doing stuff for the fun of it yourself and you just put it out there, it's free. You know, somebody just wants to play it, they have fun with it, that's outstanding. And if they don't, you know, life goes on. It's not like they paid anything for it. But when you're asking people to fork over $4 or $5 or something, you kind of have to think, okay, is this going to be at least as much fun as a Big Mac and fries? That's really my goal. If I can meet the expectation of a lunch at McDonald's, and they can walk away at least that satisfied, I've succeeded. So that's my goal.
Well, all right. Bulletproof Blues. I can't say your title. Your name, man. I'm sorry. Bulletproof Blues is coming out this month, right? February of 2012?
The plan is to release the PDF on DTRPG, DriveThruRPG, February 25th at Mysticon in Roanoke, Virginia, where I'm going to be a game guest. Fun fact, they lined me up as a game guest before I decided to come out with the game that weekend. So just a synchronicity kind of a thing.
Handy. All right. And Mr. Dan Hauser is doing your art?
Yes. Some of it. Right. Most of it. Mm-hmm. Nearly all of it, in fact.
Yep.
Fun story behind that. I had originally not intended to do any art. I didn't want to pay for it, basically, and being the horrible cheapskate miser that I am. I talked to Soren Cook, whose art I love. And I was like, do you have something you've already drawn? Because I know Soren has this huge repository, stuff he's already drawn, that he makes available at very reasonable rates. You don't get any, rights to it or anything, but you can use it.
Mm-hmm.
And he sent me a couple of things. I was like, hey, that's not bad. How much would that be? And he's like, this much. And I was like, I'm going to do it. So bought a piece of art for the cover. It's not exactly appropriate to the game, but it's really close. And it looks awesome. And so that was going to be it. The entire interior is going to be, text, wall and wall of text, page after page, black and white letters. And I was talking on the RPG Brain Trust on Facebook, which I just stumbled across one day.
Which is maintained by my friend Steph Worthington.
An excellent fellow.
He really is. He's a hell of a guy. One thing saved your dude from drowning. Anyway, go ahead.
Really? Seriously?
I'm just making that shit up. I have no idea.
See, I could have bought it. I would have bought it completely. So then people are like, so introduce yourself. What are you working on? So I was like, well, I'm working on this thing, and it's going to be like this, and probably not going to have any art in it. And I was thinking about, if after the first edition comes out, and if, people like it, and there's some generally positive reception, then maybe do a Kickstarter for the art, and all the money from the Kickstarter will just go to some artist somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
And Dan Hauser said, what? What?
Well, yeah, superheroes without art, that kind of baffled me. Like, the first thing that you're going to get is people going, I can't wait for there to be art. I'll put money into the Kickstarter. So then you'll have a book that you laid out and paid for the layout, and then somebody will come along and say, well, I'm not going to buy the book. That sounds like a great idea, but here's what I'll do. I'll give to the Kickstarter. So rather than start from a point of needing art, I just said, well, what are your needs for art?
And
he was like, my needs are copious.
Full color photorealistic illustrations on every page.
I said, then let me introduce you to my friend, Storm Cook. But he already knows Storm. I was like, well, if you can handle, interior RPG animation style, a little bit more rendered than my icon stuff, I can get that out for you, no problem.
Yeah, and I was skeptical because, frankly, had I planned to have art, I would have initiated that conversation, say, in October rather than in January, because I've worked with artists before on previous projects, and it's not a you know, get it to me by the end of the week kind of a proposition. It's art. It's art. It takes months, months and months and months. Many rounds of approvals and denials and criticisms. It's blood. It's really, art is blood. That's why it costs so much. So anyway, so I expressed that.
There's a lot of knives involved.
Yes. And he apparently he said, yeah, I can have it by then.
Yeah.
So there you go.
Because that's how he rolls.
Apparently. Well, so.
That's the thing, too. I do believe that it is art, 100%. But I also believe that I'm not only investing my ego into what I'm doing, they're investing their money into me providing a product. And as long as I don't go, oh, no, he hated that position, or, oh, no, he thinks the anatomy's, and this is a word he used, screwy, then I don't pass out and cry and go, nope, he's right, I need to fix that, and then I'll fix it. And I mean, there's one character right now that I'm still getting the hang of for him, but to my credit, I understand that it's one of the signature characters of the actual game. So I've gone through two different poses with two different body frame types, and now that I've locked into it, I think the newest one that Brandon's going to see is going to blow his socks off, so I'm not worried about that. And then we'll go on to easier stuff like guys who are made of thorns and giant energy guys. I can't wait for the guy who's basically all shadows, which was really cool.
So you're drawing this right now, even as we speak?
Yeah, actually. I took a break. I actually have my Wacom tablet here to draw as soon as we're done with this conversation, though.
Is that what you call it, a Wacom? I've been calling it a Wacom. Okay.
I don't know. I've heard it called both.
Wacom.
Yeah, Wacom tablet.
Like the mole.
Like whack-a-mole.
There you go.
Well, no.
Yeah, did I mention that break? I've lost like 5 years of my life because of that break. Because I'm like, I haven't heard from Dan. Should I email him? No. He's an artist. Don't bother him. You'll disrupt his process. Yeah. So it's all been very stressful on my part.
Yeah, he took a little break, and I'm like, no, I've been still working. So just don't worry about it. And the second it hits your desk, just say yes or no. As soon as you say no, it goes back into the machine.
Yeah.
To be tweaked and worked and fixed. That's why I'm only showing you inks now, so that when I get colors done, I can easily just pour those on and then we're all set.
Well, that's cool. Yeah, we in all seriousness, I was like, yeah, okay, I think what you're saying is great. Can you do other styles of work other than the very animated cartoon style that I've seen most of his stuff done in Icons? Like the
I know. That is the burning tire around my neck. Look at your Jamaican junta. I've been cursed with this. Can you do anything other than Icons? Yeah, of course I can. Yes, I really, really can.
So I was like, prove it.
So I said, I don't. Yeah. Like, I don't want to like, do stuff on his back, but I did.
One of those visually. Well, it was not like I was asking for full color. I was like,
nope.
You know, I was like, well, what can you do with this? And it was like one of the more visually complex action scenes that I had in mind, and it was very, very close to what I wanted, and that was good enough for me. So hey, and
I'm redoing that one as well. That's actually that Brandon doesn't understand that he's the perfect kind of person to work for me, because he goes, it's almost what I want. That's not what I want to hear. So I'll keep working at it until it's, oh, that's great. That's good. I mean, and I've gotten a couple that's perfect. Like, the Blue Shift one came out just right, the second one, so I was happy with that.
Yeah, that
whenever awesome. I hear a nice from Brandon, it might as well be a fantastic from Mike Lafferty.
What are you saying, Dan?
I'm just saying, Mike, that Brandon isn't very emotional.
Oh, okay. Well, all right.
Whereas Mike is effusive with praise, Brandon, he holds it back like a stern master with a dangling, wretched carrot for the donkey. And sometimes he lets the donkey smell the carrot, whereas Mike will, at the end of a hard day, give the donkey a bushel of carrots. You know what you get for that, Mike? Fat donkeys.
So the story behind that, the secret reason behind it is I'm usually looking at these things on my phone, and nice is shorter than that's great.
Oh, it's just, right. Nice. I'm not paying a text fees for this.
I'll leave it on the phone. I go, yes, that's fine.
You guys had mentioned that you were drawing a signature character in the setting. Well, we haven't talked about the setting at all yet. Can you tell us a little about this signature character that your image you're working on right now?
Well, that I can tell you about two of them. Well, there's three primary characters that Brandon made clear, and what was refreshing is that they're all female.
Okay.
The first one is Manticore, which is kind of an analog. If I get this wrong, Brandon, slap me. It's kind of like a female version of Tony Stark, the Rocketeer, and James Bond.
That's close.
Okay.
I actually picture her more as a cross between Tony Stark, Buckaroo Banzai, and Jennifer Lopez.
Gotcha. Gotcha.
She's a doctor, a lawyer, a movie star. She's an astronaut, and she built her armor.
Nice. So the female Buckaroo Banzai mixed with Tony Stark.
Yeah, basically.
And a nice ass.
And she's a famous pop star, primarily in Japan and China, and she's trying to segue out of that because now she's approaching 30, and that's kind of a younger woman's game. And she's being more serious now and focusing on you know, science and the business and stuff like that.
That's interesting. It's hard to be a pop star. I mean, I know I had to give it up after a certain point, but.
You just need to move on, otherwise you'll be doing.
There's a time where boy band doesn't cover what exactly you're doing anymore.
Hey, that's Manticore, who's one of the signature characters.
Well, you said you had three signature characters.
There's Zero K, who is a cryokinetic character. Beyond that, I know she's curvaceous and sassy. Beyond that, I don't know. Like, yeah. I don't have a real character idea of what she does. I didn't really look at her character sheet too in depth yet.
Okay. Well, hey, you said character sheet. Let's talk about the system a little bit.
All right,
Mr. Blackmore. Give me the elevator pitch for the system. Why is it running Rock My Socks?
Wow. All
right. Well, this is so hard. Dude, there's so many great superhero games out there now. It's really hard for me to come up with a compelling reason why anybody should buy this one. Other than the fact, for me, I'll tell you why I like it. Okay. That's really all I can do. If somebody else likes it, that's great. Mm-hmm. And if they don't, there's lots of other games to pick from. You know, no hard feelings.
Well, let's just take that then. What moved you? Because, I mean, writing a game is a long, lonely, arduous process. What made you do all that, you know, blood, sweat, and tears?
Because there wasn't anything quite what I wanted. So.
And what did you want?
I wanted enough detail so that if a reasonably common occurrence came up that, you know, I or some GM somewhere wouldn't need to make a judgment call every single time on reasonably common things. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't know, how far can I throw a car? You know, I'm this strong, how far can I throw a car? Some very, very basic stuff. You know, I've got this much power in my fire flight form. Yeah, how fast is that? Is that faster than a jet plane? Is it faster than a car? You know, how fast is that? Things like that. Not rocket science by any means, but, you know, there's several games that are at the very, very fast and loose narrative, you're as fast as the story needs you to be kind of arena. And then there's at the other end, you've got games that are very detailed as far as that kind of thing goes, more detailed than Bulletproof Blues is. Mutants and Masterminds is a perfect example. There's lots and lots of detail there, as much as you want. It's a great game, and I've played it. It's an awesome game. I love it. And then past that, you've got games like Champions that are even more detailed. So in between that range, between the Bash Icons level and the Mutants and Masterminds level, wanted something a little bit crunchier than the Icons level, but not as crunchy as Mutants and Masterminds, something faster to play, not as complex or time-consuming to do conflict resolution, but with more tools to provide to swing the character around and have a handle on what kind of interactions characters can do with each other and with the world than you typically get with the very, very minimalist level superhero games. And it's weird because I've actually been working on this since before either the games I'm using as examples were written. It just so happens that it just falls in that spot between them.
Wait, so you've been writing this game since before Mutants and Masterminds came out?
Oh, hell yeah. Oh, a long time ago. The first, and it's, you talked about it's an ordeal writing a game. Why do you, what caused you to do it? Part of the reason I've been working on it so long is because it is an ordeal. I'll work on it for a while. I'll play test a few games and then go back to whatever else is the next closest approximation that's already published. For the longest time, that was Champions. Huge Champions fan for a long, long time, like 20 years. And, the very earliest version of this game was very heavily influenced by Champions. It was much, much simpler, like one-tenth as complicated as Champions was. But still, the underlying mechanical similarities were there. That was called Heroine, which was very chic at the time. And then after a while, Mutants and Masterminds.
Heroine is so passé.
The 90s are over, man.
Yeah, sorry. The dream of the 90s are alive in Portland. Portland, yes. So then Mutants and Masterminds came around, and I was like, yes, this is so awesome. This is much closer to what I actually want to play. And got all my friends to convert to Mutants and Masterminds, converted our superhero world we were playing with to Mutants and Masterminds, played that for a while. Still tinkered with the what is currently Bulletproof Blues. At that time, it was called Jazz. Because Heroine seemed a little unnecessarily provocative a name, so I thought, well, how about Jazz? It mixes a bunch of different sources, Over the Edge, Rhysus, things like that, as inspirations, not as just, copy and paste. And Jazz, that kind of has a spirit of it. Jazz is very, very free-flowing, very description-based. Mm-hmm. You'd have fire elemental mastery as a description thing, and you'd have a number assigned to that, and pretty much anything you did with that, it'd be based off that number. Mm-hmm. It's similar to if you had Private Investigator or Millionaire Playboy, things like that. There'd be numbers attached to all this stuff, and so that's what Jazz was. And again, I would run that from time to time. Ran a really good fantasy game using that actually for a while. That was a lot of fun. But the nature of it was that really I was the only person who could run it. Because it was based on so many assumptions that were simply in my head and nowhere else. So time went on, and a couple of friends of mine, Eric Klutz-Vinson and Lloyd Montgomery, they were running Jazz for one guy's using it for a Twilight 2000 style game, and Eric was running it for it's complicated. Everybody's dead, and you're in the afterlife, and good and evil are fighting over limbo. Based on some movie. Anyway, he was running a game about using Jazz for that. And they both added in attributes, brawn, agility, reason, perception, because they wanted to have a set list of things that they could compare all characters with. And the people spoke. So I liked Jazz the way it was. So then I split that off into something else which had more set character descriptors, brawn, agility, reason, and so forth. And that I wanted it kind of to play off the name Jazz, so I called it Blues. And then when I decided to actually sell it as something, I thought it needed a more distinctively superhero-y sounding name than just Blues, so I tried to think of something alliterative and picked Bulletproof, and that's how you got Bulletproof Blues.
All right, so talking about you mentioned attributes. What are the attributes for Bulletproof Blues?
I will tell you! This was a very long and arduous process picking these. I actually wanted 6, and we actually have 8, because I couldn't see a reasonable way to cut it down anymore. Brawn, agility, reason, perception, willpower, prowess, accuracy, and endurance.
Okay.
And here's how that goes. Brawn's how strong you are. Agility's how agile, flexible you are. Reason's your ability to analyze information and draw conclusions. Perceptions, your awareness of your surroundings, your intuition, your understanding of other people, what makes them tick. Willpower is your determination, your focus. Strength of personality. Prowess is hand-to-hand fighting ability. Accuracy is your ability to hit stuff at range. I specifically wanted to divorce that from agility because coming specifically from a Champions background, high dex characters rule in Champions. And it became a a trend. Any long-term Champions player, their characters had gratuitous amounts of high dex. And I really want to get away from that, because not everybody who's really good with a gun can do backflips on a balance beam. They shouldn't necessarily be the same thing. So you get prowess, you get accuracy, and then endurance is basically how you know, badly beaten you can get before you go unconscious. So.
Okay, understood. That's your constitution. Okay. Now, you had mentioned you did some playtesting. Did you have any insightful anecdotes about playtesting experience to show kind of what the game's like?
It's a hard thing to describe, because I don't know if this is true for everybody, it's true for me. The things that I personally found the most fun make no sense to people who weren't there, because it's all based on in-jokes and what you know about the other characters and the character's history. But I can give you something I thought was a lot of fun.
Okay.
The first time a character called Nexus met a character called Paradox. Nexus is basically a corporate superhero. He was actually grown in a vat. He's actually Nexus 17, although he doesn't know that. He thinks he's, you know, was born and adopted by the Nexus Corporation and raised to be, you know, this great hero and corporate spokesman for the Nexus Corporation. But in fact, he's grown in a vat. So he's got issues. But he's essentially, fundamentally a nice guy, because he was raised to be that way in order to present the corporation in a positive light. So he has not met a whole lot of other superheroes. Part of the basic premise of the setting is there are not a lot of superheroes. They are fairly few and far between, and the ones that do exist, probably two-thirds of those, don't tell anybody. They've got, you know, super brains, so they go into banking. You know, they've got super speed, so they become thieves. You know, thieves. Yes, things like that. They are super, super tough, so they become a stuntman. That kind of thing. And they just don't tell anybody they've got, you know, they're actually bulletproof. There's a lot of prejudice and fear against people who can, say, push a building over. And there are some very high-profile superheroes, and there's some very high-profile supervillains. But for the most part, the world is distrustful of all of them. And there's some more backstory to that, but I won't get into it. So Nexus, who's actually a very high-profile, positive role model, corporate spokesman type superhero, he has not yet met a lot of other people like him, basically because he's been so sheltered. Paradox, she's a time manipulator who first got her powers back in World War II. And that's a long story. It has to do with a supervillain called TikTok Man. But as an accident, she got time manipulation powers. Part of that is that she basically doesn't age anymore, and she can drop copies of herself from other time streams. Lava pygmies are attacking Chicago. They've tunneled up into Chicago. They're making a mess. There's lava everywhere. And this sounds very wacky, but in fact, they, you know, burn people alive, and it's actually pretty horrific. So Nexus comes on the scene, and he's got electrical manipulation powers, and he's, you know, trying to shock the lava pygmies, and it's not having a whole lot of effect. And Paradox is there, and she's thinking, well, these guys are on fire and they made a lava. I'll get a fire hose from the office building and reel it out. So she pulls copies of herself from the future. And so there's three of herself there, and she's hosing down lava pygmies who harden and can't move when they're soaked like that. And then they cool off. So after a while of this, Nexus is having very little effect on the lava pygmies. Paradox can only hose down a couple at a time, but is slowly making progress. Nexus, over his earpiece from his handling team, they tell him that, we're picking up something on the cameras. There's a woman over there who's spraying them down, and that seems to be working. See if you can somehow go by her, and when the cameras are on her, try to get in with that. And he goes over there and he uses his electrical powers on the pygmies that are standing in the water. He's like, hey, they're all standing in the water. I'll electrocute all of them at the same time. And he spent a plot point to make that really effective, because plot points, it's the same thing you've seen in a dozen other games. It's, what do they call it in some masterminds? Basically, let you break the rules.
Yeah.
Do something.
Hero points.
Hero points, thank you.
Let's exercise narrative control. Yeah.
There you go. And so he fries a bunch of lava pygmies, spends a plot point, and because they're standing in the water, it actually works really well on them because they're all grounded and all that. Unfortunately, so is she.
Oh.
So he actually kills two of Paradox. And so that was pretty funny. We had to be there. So, but one of her is alive because it's the one that's up by the building next to the big wheel that turns the water on. She wasn't standing in the water. But she was so mad that he electrocuted the other two of her. And the way that power works in Bulletproof Blues is whichever of your copies is still left, that's the quote-unquote real one. So it's not – the character did not actually lose anything. But it's
– she knows for sure she's going to die at some point in the future.
At some point. So all of her so just her duplicate.
Yeah. And you're pretty sure that there's a good chance that's going to be at that moment.
Well, see, the thing is, it's they're alternate timelines. So.
Oh, okay. All right. So it's almost like an interdimensional kind of thing. All right.
Yeah.
At least two of them had the same fate.
it's a conceit of her particular flavor of duplication is that she can see multiple timelines,
mm-hmm.
and she pulls them from timelines that are unlikely. So she's actually unlikely to be, you know, electrocuted later on. at least in that way. But the fun thing about that wasn't even that he, you know, electrocuted two of her right there. For the next, like, four or five games, she would not let him forget that. Like, every time something came up, she is, like, really, really mean to him. Talking about, you know, oh, watch out. He has a tendency to electrocute his teammates. You know, things like that. It was, like I said, he had to be there, but it cracked by the time.
That's a good running joke. All right, cool. So, we're in layout right now, or art's still being produced, or where are we at here?
Art's being produced, mechanics and game system and various fluff is being finalized. I'm actually a whiz at layout, so...
Really?
Layout will take, like, a day.
Really?
Yeah.
That's good to know. Do you accept commissions? Are you looking for work?
No.
Oh, goddammit. Okay, all right, fine.
No. I don't particularly enjoy layout. I'm just really good at it.
Yeah, that's how I am with killing guys. I had to walk away.
So anyway, let's deal with that.
Okay, well, cool. All right, well, so hey, game's coming out. What was their release date again?
February 25th, Mysticon, Roanoke, Virginia.
So that is 18 days from now.
That's the plan. Now, if that actually happens, you know, there's... As life throws you lemons, you make lemonade. We just bought a house,
mm-hmm.
and I'm actually in the middle of moving.
So you're surrounded by boxes and stuff right now as we speak.
I am surrounded by boxes as we speak. They're piled up behind me. It's just so, and I'm going to be really, really busy moving. So there's this possibility that it actually won't be ready for February 25th. But I maintain optimism. Optimism in the face of adversity.
All right. And you've been playtesting this game for how long now? 5 years?
The current version?
Mm-hmm.
6-8 months.
Okay, cool.
But a lot of the underlying stuff has been playtested for years and years and years and years.
Okay, very nice. Okay.
I'd say it's mainly been like my homebrew tinker system. So I'll bring it out, we'll play a campaign using it, put it away, and not touch it again for a year. So.
Okay. All right, so Bulletproof Blues out end of February, beginning of March, maybe, depending on how the move goes. By Storn Took. Interior art by our friend Dan Hauser.
Oh, that's yes. Right. And I wanted to mention something else. It'll be PDF initially, but I do plan to support the print-on-demand thing that DriveThruRPG does.
Mm-hmm.
That will be later because there's some layout changes that need to be done for that to support that, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and then I've also been talking to Angus Abramson over at Chronicle City, European print distribution, so that's pretty cool.
Yeah, try to get Angus on the podcast. If you haven't talked to him, mention that.
I will mention it to him next time I talk to him.
Tell him about the lovely gift bags that we send to all our podcast guests.
Yeah, they're cleverly disguised as those little envelopes full of coupons. You might have thrown yours out already. I'm just saying, you have to open all your mail.
There's some cheese in there. There's like one.
Yeah, no doubt.
There's one slice of prepackaged American cheese.
Are you sure? That, I mean, cheese? I looked like a free sample of dishwashing detergent, but it ended up being a really nice D20.
That's because we care here at the Banff Podcast. So yeah, keep your eyes out for that.
Yeah, or we'll poke them out. But, see, I always go one step too far. I have a problem.
I was going to try to save you on that one, and I realized that I poking just wasn't that funny. Sorry, Dan.
It's all about the three shooters, my friend.
Oh, so hey, they're making a new one.
I know.
You seen the trailer for that?
Yes. I think that that having Larry David as a nun made it okay for me then. Like, I was like, okay, this will be as goofy as I want it to be.
Wait, Larry David?
Yeah, they got Larry David from Curb Your Enthusiasm to play Sister Mary Mangala.
That's pretty cool.
Your dog is very political.
Oh, sorry. Man.
Your dog audibly said, oh, no, no.
Have you guys been able to hear her all podcast?
No, not at all. Just now.
Just now. Yes, sir.
Just now when my joke failed. Not only did it fail, instead of crickets, a dog pitifully whining. That's worse than crickets, my friend.
All right, so just for the listeners out there, my dog just had surgery today. So she's still trying to catch up on the anesthesia. She had several tooth extractions and some lumps removed. So, yeah, it's kind of a thing. So
that'd be.
Yeah, yeah. If you've listened to the podcast for a while, you've heard her barking in the background at various times. So that's, yeah. That's what's going on there. So, anyway, we have covered Bulletproof Blues, I guess, pretty well. Anything else you want to comment on that before we call it a podcast?
Yes. Yes, I will actually when I start doing colors for the pictures, I'm going to start a thread at RPGNet so you can kind of get an idea. Or, Brandon, you can put up the cover, and then I can start dropping art underneath the first post, like in the ads announcement section over at RPGNet.
I approve of this plan.
Cool. Just ship. You can even send me a copy of the cover, and I can put it out there. Do you have a finished copy? I've seen the art. I don't know that you have a cover, finalized cover version of that art, though.
Yes, I do have a finalized cover version of art. Wait, what did I say? I do have a final, what I hope to be the final version of the cover. Yes,
very good.
The answer is yes.
Send it to me. I'll start up a thread, and then everyone can ask questions, and I'll grab Brandon by the back of the neck and say, Brandon, answer these questions.
Post
so
something.
People can get questions answered.
No, I want to be mysterious.
No
and
way.
Actually, once the game comes out, I actually have a plan.
Yay! Yes. Speaking as an artist, I love the plans.
Do you want to hear post-release things, or do you want to like not do that?
No, please, tell us.
Yeah.
Your enthusiasm is contagious.
it was more like, of course,
yes, man, for God's sakes.
Well, here's the plan. After the game comes out, I've kind of touched on the setting. The setting in the basic book will be largely implicit. It'll be things you find in, like, the characters' backstories or in the examples and stuff like that. Mainly, there's two main reasons for this. One, writing setting material is time-consuming, and I want to go ahead and empty the book out. Two is I want the basic rule book to be cheap. And if it's a 300-page book with 150 pages of setting stuff, it's not going to be cheap. So I wanted the base book to be like $4.95 cover price and for the PDF and short and playable, something people could pick up. So the setting stuff in that is going to be largely implicit. So if it becomes somewhat popular, gets people want to hear more, come out with setting book with more NPCs and more heroes and villains and things, more about the default setting and the history of it and that kind of thing, and hopefully people will like that. Also talking to some people who have done supplements for other game systems, like Icons and Mutes and Masterminds and so forth, on adapting work that they've already done to Bulletproof Blues, so that people have ready-made adventure source material they can use. So that's kind of the plan with that.
Do we want to drop any names, or are we still in negotiations for that stuff?
It's
probably best to just wait and see.
Okay, cool.
Because I can't promise any of it will come through at all, you know, but I've talked to people and they've expressed tentative interest, so.
Okay.
And they're probably going to wait and see if the game sucks or not, so it won't suck, and they'll all be thrilled, so, and everything will work out great. However, after it actually comes out, I'm going to have a contest. The imprint of the book is Kalos Comics, and the conceit of the cover is that it's actually a cover of a comic book.
Mm-hmm.
It says, like, still only $4.95, Kalos Comics. Well, Marvel has Captain Marvel, or Mar-Vell, depending on how you want to pronounce it. And, you know, I thought it'd be pretty cool to have, like, Captain Kalos for the game system, because there's not anybody like that. It's purely a logo. And so I'm going to sponsor Make Up Captain Kalos, once there's actually a game for people to use to make Captain Kalos up with. And I will pick the one that I like best, and whoever wins that will get a gift certificate or credit or whatever, Pro Fantasy Software, that people who do Campaign Cartographer, which has nothing to do with superheroes, but it's cool software. So, you know, what the heck?
Hey, surprise. If you want, I'll find them one of the band podcast gift baskets.
You know, that would be awesome, too.
Okay. All right. Consider it done.
The cheese makes an excellent letter opener.
Yes. Yes, it does. All right. Cool. So your game company is called Kalos?
Yes. K-A-L-O-S. Kalos Comics.
Okay, cool. Yeah, I did not know that. That's good information. And you're set up in RPG Now, so when folks want to pick up the game, say in 18 days when it goes live, RPG Now, Kalos Games, Kalos Comics, then that's where you find it.
That is correct.
Okay.
And then eventually be carried in Europe via Chronicle City.
Okay. Now, is Chronicle City doing any American distribution, or is that just over the pond?
The plan is that they'll handle European, and anybody who wants it in the U.S. will just do the print-on-demand through DriveThruRPG. However, the licensing with DriveThruRPG, you can either be exclusive or non-exclusive.
Uh-huh.
And I'm kind of a hedge-your-bets kind of a guy, so it's non-exclusive. So I can sell it through other people if I want. So if Chronicle City has the means and desire to sell print versions in the U.S., they are perfectly capable of doing so.
Okay. Cool. Beautiful. Alrighty then.
Oh, their version compares to the print-on-demand version from DriveThruRPG too.
I mean, you know, that process goes for you, because I've had a lot of publishers tell me they've had some difficulty getting approvals with the RPG Now POD stuff.
Interesting. We shall see.
Okay, cool. Alright guys, anything else we want to mention?
I hope your dog feels better.
Hey, yeah, definitely. Your dog is feeling good.
Yeah, I've been sending her good thoughts and feeding her painkillers. So, hopefully one of the two will work. Dan, anything else you want to pimp or talk about?
Yeah, shortly after the release of Bulletproof Blues, you'll be seeing your copies of Hero Pack 3 in your mailbox. So folks out there waiting for more Hero Pack 3 news, you just got it. So keep an ear to the ground for that. Sometime after that, we'll be Team Up, and sometime after that will be the Omnibus, which will have a bunch of adventures. More solid than that, I couldn't give you.
Yep, fair enough. We know how things can kind of slide around with Icons releases. So, all right, cool. All right, guys, I want to thank you very much for your time. I know, heck, Brandon, you're moving right now, so I know your life is chaotic. And Dan, I know you're busy with rehearsals and, you know, everything else you're doing.
A little busy, but still plugging away, and always available if you ask me ahead of time.
Cool. All right, guys. Well, hey, thanks a lot. And to our listeners, thank you for tuning in, and we'll catch you next time on the Banff Podcast.